If you grew up in the 70s and 80s, chances are you've got Star Wars forever burned in your brain. Like many of his generation, the actor Simon Pegg is an unabashed Star Wars junkie. He credits the movie with firing up his imagination and his career. Pegg writes about his cultural sweet spot in the book Nerd Do Well. Today, Pegg is a celebrated writer, director, and actor. He's worked with Quentin Tarantino, Peter Jackson, and, yes, George Lucas. He's created and starred in the cult zombie hit Shaun of the Dead and Paul. Steve Paulson asked him where it all began. According to Pegg, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
I think I was absolutely the correct age for it, and it had a seismic effect on me, as it did on millions and millions of other children, you know.
Now, for people who were not of your age, not of your generation, I think it can be hard to understand why Star Wars had such an impact. What's your theory about that?
I think it's many, many things. For a while when I was a kid, I used to think it was just because it was, just simply because it was a great movie. But there were so many factors involved in creating the cultural phenomenon that is Star Wars at the time. It happened in terms of its release in America. It happened at a very specific time in American history, at a time when America was feeling a particular way after the Vietnam War. It soothed a lot of soreness that America was feeling, and as a result, America went absolutely nuts for it. And when us in the UK felt it coming on the horizon, it rumbled like that Star Destroyer at the beginning into view for us. You know, it was coming for a while, and then suddenly it got there, and it was everything we kind of expected it to be. Because as well as being this sort of strange reflection of the American dream as it was at the time, or the way that perhaps the nation wanted to feel, you know, in the light of all this amoral confusion that occurred after the Vietnam War, it's also a cracking film. It's a great adventure. It's full of amazing special effects and fun characters. It hit so many notes correctly, and a lot of things fell into place to make it what it was.
Well, what's interesting is, I mean, looking back, I mean, I watched Star Wars not that long ago, in fact. They can come across as pretty cheesy now, sort of, you know, moments of their time. And I guess the question is, do they still hold up, or were they just kind of movies of their time?
I think it will date, you know, in terms of the special effects, with the way that special effects have evolved since. Obviously, it's a lot cruder than it seemed at the time. At the time, it was cutting edge, and what we were used to was far less than what we saw on screen. So it was amazing to us. Harrison Ford's sideburns are quite big. You know, there's Mark Hamill's hair is very feathery in the first one. But I think really they're more than just, you know, you watch something like, say, Buck Rogers, the TV series that came out around about the same time. It's very 70s. They're all dancing to disco music. Star Wars managed somehow to become timeless by not setting itself in the future in a weird way. You know, Lucas set it in the past, which was a stroke of genius because it immediately didn't assign it to any particular time in Earth history. It was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and as such, it had its own architecture, its own look, its own aesthetic, which kind of marked it out as being timeless. And although there are little signifiers of its Earth age in there, I think it holds up pretty damn well. Particularly The Empire Strikes Back, which I think is the best of all of the films. It's far less dated than a lot of cinema of the time, you know.
Hmm. Let me skip ahead in your own career. I mean, what really put you on the map as an actor and as a creative figure in movies and TV was your British TV series Spaced,
yeah,
which was a huge hit in Britain. It's sort of just being discovered in the U.S. right now. And this was kind of sort of playing on that love of sci-fi and pop culture, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I think, you know, it was really because of people like Kevin Smith, who'd just started to, you know, make stuff, you know, like Clerks, as you guys would say. It was a film where people spoke about things like that and didn't worry about people not knowing what they were talking about. And, you know, I saw that film and thought, oh, I could make something where I just spoke about the things that I really like and, you know, trust that there are people out there who'd know what I was talking about. We didn't make Spaced for a mass audience. We made it to speak very, very personally to a small number of people. We just didn't realize how big that small number was.
Who were you trying to speak to with that TV series?
Our friends, you know, like people that were like us, people that, I mean, it was about being in your 20s and not getting married, basically. It was like we were part of a generation that were suddenly given this extension to our youths because the pressure to marry and settle down was so much less. We were given this sort of hiatus from adulthood, but nobody knew what to do with it. It was like, oh, great, we don't have to do this now, so we'll just play video games. Hmm. You know, that was kind of, that was, and watch films.
But then there was also kind of this, there, you have all these references to pop culture, to past movies. I mean, it's a very knowing series.
Absolutely. And it was for the generation of kids that were brought up, that experienced the cultural earthquake that was Star Wars and the sudden explosion of popular cinema and TV and had basically grown up on a diet. The generation before us was, you know, TV was a novelty. For us, it was a commonplace. And, you know, we grew up on a diet of popular culture. And as such, our frames of reference basically were from popular culture. And Spaced is kind of the story of two people who are recounting their lives and using popular culture as every metaphor. It happens literally in Spaced. You know, they go into a rescue, you know, they rescue their dog from the animal testing laboratory, and it's like Mission Impossible or whatever. You know, it's how Tim and Daisy would have recounted their lives. I really like the idea of, as an audience member, having some work to do about, you know, I always relate it back to the time when I saw E.T. and I heard John Williams dropped in a phrase of Yoda's theme from The Empire Strikes Back into the score of E.T. when E.T. sees the kid dressed as Yoda on Halloween. And I remember hearing that music and knowing it and feeling like, I get that. I totally get that. And I wanted to stand up in the theater and say, can you hear that? It's Yoda's music. He's playing it because you can see Yoda. And I remember that sense of like complete fulfillment that I felt. And going into Spaced, I thought, wouldn't it be great if we did that every other second?
I was like you once. I let my principles get in the way sometimes. I punched a bloke in the face once for saying Hawk the Slayer was rubbish.
Good for you.
Yeah, thanks. But that's not the point, Tim. The point is, I was defending the fantasy genre with terminal intensity. The Phantom Menace was 18 months ago, Tim.
I know, Bilbo. Okay, it still hurts. You know, that kid wanted a Jar Jar doll.
Kids like Jar Jar.
Why?
What about the Ewoks? Hey? They were rubbish. You don't complain about them.
Yeah, but Jar Jar Binks makes the Ewoks look like shaft.
I've had enough, Tim.
But Bilbo...
Look, I know how you feel, right? I really do. But this can't go on.
What are you trying to say, Bilbo?
I'm going to have to let you go.
Well, the first movie you did with your buddies and collaborators Nick Frost and Edgar Wright was the zombie film, Shaun of the Dead. And the idea is, how do you survive a zombie takeover? So how did you come up with the idea? Did you just sit around playing out various scenarios?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we kind of always talk. I mean, Nick and I always sit in the pub talking about it for hours, about what we do. We go, you know, we get to this place and we get a car and we drive there and what would be the best place to hole up and how would it happen? And you know, we had our plan ready to go. It was like protect and survive. You know, in the 50s, it was nuclear bombs. For us in the 90s, it was zombies.
Where's safe? Where's familiar? Where can I smoke?
Take car, go to Mum's, kill Phil,
sorry,
grab Liz, go to the Winchester, have a nice cold pint, and wait for all this to blow over. How's that for a slice of fried gold?
Yeah, boy!
It is vital that you stay in your homes.
So what, you go hole up in your favorite pub? Is that how you escape?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We kind of were sitting in the pub thinking, hey, it wouldn't be bad in here, would it? Because look, there's really heavy doors and you can't really see. And we'd have enough beer to last us until oblivion. This is great. And so Edgar and I started hatching this idea of what would it be like if like a regular, ordinary schmo, you know, found himself amid a zombie apocalypse.
Hmm. Now, we've talked about how you grew up with a lot of the classic science fiction movies and TV shows, and then you're playing Scotty in J.J. Abrams' Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
Must have been kind of a thrill to be asked to do that.
Oh, yeah, more than a thrill. It was giddying. I mean, I couldn't believe it when I got the email from J.J. J.J. is very direct as a filmmaker. He doesn't really, you know, beat around the bush. If he wants you to do something, he'll call you personally. They'd been casting the whole film and the cast was coming together really well, but they hadn't found their Scotty. And I think JJ just thought, oh, I'll just ask Simon Pegg. You know, he kind of thought, oh, screw it, I'll just call Pegg. And I got an email just saying, literally just said, would you want to play Scotty? And I kind of, I was just getting off a plane from New York and I opened it and I looked at it and I showed it to my wife. And she, who is Scottish, she burst out laughing. And I was like, what do I do with that? How do I respond to that? Just yes? I can't just write yes back. That would be ridiculous. So I kind of thought about it for a couple of days. And I think JJ thought I didn't want to do it because he was like, oh, okay, fair enough. And I was like, wait. I didn't say I'm not going to do it. I'm just saying I can't just say yes because that's just too huge. And he said, look, you know, the worst thing that can happen is every couple of years we get to hang out and make a fun film. And I thought that was the best argument for going to work I'd ever heard. So I said what I was always going to say, which was yes.
And in the film, you come face to face with one of your idols. In fact, here's a clip of you as Scotty meeting Leonard Nimoy as Spock.
And I know exactly what's going on here, okay? Punishment, isn't it? Ongoing for something that was clearly an accident.
You are Montgomery Scott. You know him?
Hi, that's me. You're in the right place. Unless there's another hardworking, equally starved staff of the officer around.
Me.
Get it. Shut up. You don't eat anything. You can eat like a bean and you're done. I'm talking about food. Real food. But you're here now, so thank you. Where is it?
You are, in fact, the Mr. Scott who postulated the theory of transwar beaming.
That's what I'm talking about.
The title of your memoir is Nerd Do Well, and I get the impression that this is a really good time to be a nerd, maybe better than any other time in history. Would you agree? I mean, is there something about our culture now that values the nerd sensibility?
I think so, but I think it's like this is prior to the fall of the Roman Empire in terms of nerd culture. I think Patton Oswalt wrote a very good article about it, about wake up, geek culture, it's time to die. I think what's happened is essentially the corporate mentality has cottoned on to nerd culture as being something that's quite easy to sell. I think we as human beings in this age, and always have been slightly inclined towards infantile regression. We like being kept in a state of arrested development. And so a lot of mainstream sort of cinematic output is all like, it's kid stuff, it's science fiction, it's superheroes, it's things that are genuinely associated with childhood. And that's all because we have a propensity to not want to grow up and face the facts about the world and the universe. And I think what's happened is the marketing machine has realized our need for that, has realized our need for infantile regression and is selling it to us very, very hard. And I think nerd culture has basically been assimilated by the man, and things are going to change pretty soon. There's a storm coming.
This has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Simon Pegg is an actor, writer, and director. He starred in the cult zombie film Shaun of the Dead. And Paul, his memoir is called Nerd Do Well. Steve Paulson spoke with him.